Welcome, everyone. I'm Andrew Thompson, General Manager of CFMG Capital, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Smart Capital. As you know, each month we sit down with an expert guest to explore a key topic that impacts investors like you and to provide practical insights to help you on your journey towards financial freedom. In this episode, we're going to dive into the role of regulation and how it supports the investment performance. Now, Australia's real estate private credit market is expected to quadruple over the next 5 years as commercial banks take a smaller share of the growing demand for loans. The clear strength of demand to invest in real estate private credit means that this sector is going to grow from about 5 to 6% of the Australian credit market up to possibly as high as 20%, in line with market penetration in Europe and the US. We're a keen supporter of much greater regulation in the private credit sector, which is why I've got today joining me for this discussion, Octavia Bird, who is our general counsel here at CFMG Capital and responsible for all of our compliance and regulatory considerations. She's responsible for legal requirements for our real estate transactions, development projects, compliance and corporate governance for the business. Welcome, Octavia. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Great to be here.
So I guess the key message today is that regulation isn't really a burden. It's a real sort of cornerstone of trust and professionalism and the long-term sustainability of our position in the private credit market. Some of the things we probably should talk about, there's a lot of changes in this space and a lot of attention on the private credit market and updates to the regulatory framework. So I guess we'll get Octavia maybe to talk us through some of those changes as a starting point.
Yeah, Andrew, with the development and the popularity increase of the private credit industry, there has been improvements and there has always been considerations by ASIC to change their processes, change the obligations of AFSL holders based on what is happening in the market and to increase the regulatory requirements because their main aim is to improve the confidence of the public within the industry. So ASIC consider main items that need to be within surveillance, and then they undertake that surveillance within the industry. They then provide a report as to what needs to be improved, and then we take a proactive response to that report and improve our processes and procedures. So one of the items that have been implemented by ASIC or required by ASIC is to ensure that we have a target market determination, and that is a public-facing document. And then we have a positive obligation to ensure that our clients are within our target market determination for our product.
So the TMD, I guess, you know, to simplify it for our listeners, it's to create a safer, better aligned investment environment for both us as the fund manager and for investors. I guess it can be considered complicated, but it's essentially designed to ensure that investors meet our target market. But the overarching position on it is, you know, given the nature of what's within the TMDs, it's ensuring that they understand the product. So they have to answer a bunch of questions, ensure they understand what our product is, what the risks are. And then it also sort of provides a limitation, so to speak, on the amount of money they can invest. And what that means is our salespeople, they're required to ask a series of quite detailed questions about someone's personal assets and their wealth. And not everyone's comfortable answering those questions. And then as a result of the introduction of the TMD or the changes to the TMD, we're then supposed to cap them at 25% of our best understanding of their investable assets. So someone can't just come along and dump 100% of their invested assets. Even if they love us, they think we're the best product ever, we simply legally cannot take 100% or even 26% of their investable assets into our fund. So that's a really key obligation on our behalf to make sure we check those and ask those detailed questions and ensure we're adhering to that policy. You know, I was talking to an investor recently. They've invested with us for some time, over 10 years now. They're very confident in our product and recently put an application in to invest a certain amount of funds into one of our investments. But as a result of our recent change in policy in our TMD, where we can only take 25% of investable assets as opposed to 50%, this particular investment, based on our understanding of their asset position, would have tipped them well over the 25%. So I actually had to have quite a difficult conversation. It was escalated up to me, difficult conversation with this client, that we wouldn't be accepting their investment and we'd be capping them at 25%. Initially, he was quite upset, started calling us dodgy and all those sorts of things. And then when I sort of was quick to stop and point out that, you know, if we were dodgy, we'd be welcoming much more than 25%, even up to 100%, and booking a trip to Europe. He sort of understood. And in the end, he did appreciate the fact that we were taking our compliance seriously. So I guess that's a really active anecdotal example of working with a customer, ensuring that they meet our TMD. We are adhering to our DD obligations. So it's just a really good practical example of how that works in the market and how we work with our clients. So I guess the overarching message here is the compliance environment is ever changing and evolving. So, you know, one particular pretty prominent fund manager, they had a stop order placed against them. They weren't actually necessarily doing anything wrong, but their TMD allowed for 50% asset allocation. They were told to review that. As I understand it, in the process of responding to that review, they had a stop order placed on them. And it was decided that to get the stop order removed, they need to update their TMD to 25%. So CFMG Capital over here, we were sitting in a similar position where we had a TMD that allowed asset allocation of up to 50%. So obviously we revised our TMD and reduced that number to 25%. And that's in response to ASIC action against others. But it just shows it's a really evolving space that we're playing in at the moment. Our approach to TMDs is just having a really clear definition of risk profile, investment horizon, investor experience. But essentially, ASIC, from a perspective of private credit, they're just putting a broad brush across the whole industry, declaring all private credit, regardless of performance, track record, history, is considered a high-risk investment. And that's their obligation, or that's their mandate, so they're entitled to do that. And as a result, we have to ensure that we're sticking or adhering to those compliance obligations. And probably something that's important to note, there is any market like ours that's enjoying strong growth will attract newer and less well-credentialed participants, and private credit's no exception. But a really key message, certainly for our investors or potential investors, is CFMG Capital, in our 18 years of operation, have always maintained what's called a retail AFSL or retail license. And what that does is that provides Chapter 5C protection, so Chapter 5C of the Corporations Act. And retail investors is basically defined as everyone except sophisticated investors. And those protections within Chapter 5C include, but not limited to, registration and having a responsible entity, ensuring you have a compliance plan, issuing all your products via a product disclosure statement or a PDS, having a constitution and compliance committee, financial and audit requirements, ongoing disclosure and reporting requirements, investment and lending restrictions, and having a dispute resolution process. So there's a little bit of debate about whether these protections are over the top or sensible, but they are a very good starting point. And the difficulty in our market can arise when you consider the sophisticated, in inverted commas, investor exception. If the investors in a scheme are sophisticated, then Chapter 5C does not apply to that scheme, and the sophisticated investors are not protected. Now, a really key point on this topic is, to be a sophisticated investor 20 years ago, you needed a net wealth of $2.5 million or annual earnings exceeding $250,000. Only 1.9% of investors were deemed sophisticated and therefore not protected by Chapter 5C. In the past 20 years, this has not been indexed. These thresholds have not changed. So now it's estimated that 20% of investors are considered sophisticated and therefore unprotected by Chapter 5C. So consequently, there is a loophole in our industry that can be exploited by new entrants in private credit lending, the sophisticated exemption to avoid retail, and therefore they're avoiding regulation. So it's a really, really key point that if you're in this space and you're considering private credit, I'd be always looking at those that hold a retail AFSL, as there's far stronger investor protections in that space. So I guess, sorry, I've been going on a bit of a rant there. Get back to our actual expert in compliance in Octavia. For us, we consider, as much as our, like, I'm not going to pretend otherwise, our sales guys can sometimes, you know, get a bit hot under the collar when the new compliance obligations are applied to them. certainly from my perspective in management and Octavia as our compliance manager and responsible for all things compliance, we see it as a strategic advantage. It's not just about ticking boxes. It's about being a trustworthy and resilient business. So I guess any talking points on that from you, Octavia?
Yeah. So holding an AFSL license is obviously a very big privilege. It allows us to provide the product to all our investors. However, it does come with significant and real obligations. So we have to adhere to a wide range of obligations, even underneath the Corporations Act. We have various ASIC guidelines we need to abide by. And consequently, that means that we have a very large compliance plan that we have to abide by. That compliance plan has all our obligations, our processes, our procedures, our reporting requirements. So everything we do is as a consequence of the compliance plan. So when we talk about a compliance plan, that talks about, you know, our design and distribution obligation. It talks about our financial reporting. It talks about what training we require to provide to our staff to ensure that we're keeping our staff knowledgeable in the area and up to date with all the current market obligations. And not only that, it's ensuring that we have the correct sign-offs for all our disclosures to investors. So yes, it does come with a point of a seesaw of our salespeople wanting to sell our products to anybody, everything, and, you know, wanting to distribute our funds as quickly as possible. However, I'm here to ensure that we're doing it in a way that is compliant with all our obligations, particularly our compliance plan.
Yeah, so the challenge, I guess, is twofold. We've got staff that are employed to source and seek new investment. We also have customers, are willing investors and wish to invest in our product. And sometimes on quite regular occasions, we have to tell them that they can't do that. And I can tell you anecdotally, like that doesn't always go down well when someone's willing to invest money in a fund they'd like to, or a certain amount of money, and we just simply tell them they can't because we're taking our compliance obligations seriously. And that's when it can get challenging internally, because obviously our sales guy wants to make a sale and the compliance team telling him we can't take that investment or that sale. And that's all part of the roundabout of compliance. I guess, Octavia, sorry to put you on the spot here, but we are using a little bit of industry jargon. You mentioned in that last discussion point about design and distribution obligations. Can I put you on the spot and give me a really layman's summary of what design and distribution obligations are?
Yeah, of course. So it's kind of a two-step item to consider. So we got our target market determination, which essentially tells us what our ideal investor is. So what's their objective of their investment? So are they seeking capital growth, capital preservation? Are they seeking an income from this? And then what we're required to do as an AFSL is design a product and distribute it out to our ideal investor or our target market. So with our design and distribution obligations, it's really, really strict as to where we should be marketing our product. So therefore, our marketing team, they can't just go and place our product and market it to investors.
So I guess circling around to the topic of reporting, probably what's a key message in that space is transparent reporting is a really core element of what CFMG Capital do for our investors and our value proposition. But probably what's unknown to investors or not clear is our reporting obligations actually to ASIC themselves are probably even a greater obligation of ours. And we would do more reporting into ASIC than we perhaps do to even our own investors. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So we do have an annual audit, and we undertake that audit and we submit the report to ASIC. So we do have a very significant amount of reporting that needs to be submitted to ASIC. But beyond that, a part of our compliance is also reporting regularly to our clients. And that's not only to ensure that we're communicating well with our clients, but creates transparency.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, investors really appreciate, and I myself as an investor that doesn't just invest with us, obviously, because that would be a breach of the TMD, but investors really appreciate organizations that communicate really well and really regularly and really transparently. So we see that our our regular reporting to our investors, our quarterly updates, our monthly newsletters. And one of our taglines is openly real people. You can call our investor relations team anytime during business hours. We see that as a real competitive advantage, not a obligation or a burden on our business. We see it as a strength and a competitive strength that our reporting is in tip-top shape. So what we're talking about, I guess, our obligations, particularly in relation to the TMD and the DDO and all the other abbreviations we're rolling out. At the end of the day, our approach to regulation is central to long-term success and sustainability, even though, as we mentioned earlier, some of those organizations that have had stop orders, they weren't necessarily for major breaches of any kind of compliance. But if you don't have someone like we do with Octavia constantly monitoring market surveillance from ASIC, market information and what ASIC are doing and what their points of interest are, and you're not constantly evolving your compliance, you can have one of these stop orders placed against you. And while at the end of the day, that stop order might say that you haven't necessarily done too much wrong, the last thing you want is someone to Google your name and see that you've had ASIC stop orders placed against you, no matter what they are for. So for us, it's a real key to stay on top of our compliance obligations, stay up to date with what the changes in the industry and what the compliance obligations are, to ensure that our name is not associated with any kind of action from ASIC. And that's a really important point, because at the end of the day, an investor off the street that's not paying a whole lot of attention might be interested in investing in your product. They might meet your target market. Quick bit of research, as all investors should do, does a quick Google search and it says there's ASIC's taken action against us, and suddenly you're off their shopping list. So it's really important why we see regulation and compliance as really good business practice and an important strength of ours and our value proposition. What would you have any comments around that, Octavia, even though I've just given you a bit of a wrap on in your role in that for the business?
Yeah. So I think it's really important that compliance isn't just a tick boxing exercise. Investors, they should be considering whether where they're placing all their money is somewhere that takes compliance seriously. You need to be investing in a company that you trust, and you know that the company that they are investing takes compliance seriously.
So I guess the final sort of overarching comments, or how I'd summarize it, is, you know, things like regulation and compliance, it does set really clear expectations within your business and with your customers. It can drive professional discipline. So making sure you're staying ahead of the game, not being reactionary. Having an AFSL ensures real operational maturity. And I guess our friends at ASIC, their oversight ensures real transparency and fairness in the industry, and protects investors from those, you know, fraudulent operators that do come into the market occasionally. And most importantly, I guess the TMD, or the target market determination, it aligns investors with the right products for them. And that's a real key, particularly when you're dealing with people's life savings or making investments for their future. You want to ensure that you're not breaching your obligations and putting their futures at risk. So for us, that's why it's such an important part of our business, because at the end of the day, the investors' interests are at the heart of all our decision-making, and that comes with the compliance process as well. So really appreciate Octavia coming on and joining us. As I said, making sure you stay on top of obligations, not just reacting, ensures you don't get your name associated with stop orders or regulation or actions from ASIC. And for us, Octavia leads our business in ensuring that's the case with us.
Thank you, Andrew.